and greetings in Jesus' name. I feel like a pilgrim and a stranger in a real sense this morning. I know very few people here this morning. There's a few people I recognize and I know very casually, but it's good to be here. I've been blessed this morning. There's a beautiful drive coming up through. We think that in our part of the country, we think we live in the country. But you realize when you drive up through here that we're not city folks, but it's a little more populated, and it's just pretty rural up here, and it just has its own beauty even in the wintertime. So my mind, is one of several different places since arriving here and on our drive up this morning, but our memory verse this morning really stood out to me. I didn't notice it just sitting in class, but Isaiah 30, just listen to these words. It says, "Woe to the rebellious children, saith the Lord, that take counsel, but not of me, and that cover with a covering, but not of my spirit, that they may add sin to sin." Then he goes on in verse 2, and he says, "That walk down into Egypt." Now that's a regression, right? That's going back. "That walk down into Egypt, and have not asked at my mouth," God's mouth, "to strengthen themselves in the strength of Pharaoh, and to trust in the shadow of Egypt. Therefore shall the strength of Pharaoh be your shame, and the trust in the shadow of Egypt your confusion." Now, I think on driving up this morning, we passed a number of community churches, and I was blessed to see parking lots that had vehicles parked in them. Because as one looks across the landscape of our country, I say our country, the country that we live in, we're but strangers and pilgrims here, you see the very fabric that once held a nation, what was they said was built on good moral principles, seen that literally being frayed right away. Where did it start? A nation is built of what? It's made up of homes. There's churches. But what makes a church? It's a home. What makes a home? And it's a marriage. Well, what makes a marriage? It's individuals. And I'd like to talk to the core of this, I think, is a foundation. And that's the problem. Is that I grew up in southern Indiana. We had some open mining there of coal mines that would get done. And after that was reclaimed, they would not advise you to build there for, I don't remember how many years, it's a pretty long time. But there was this one gentleman that he decided that it's been long enough he can build his house. And that house became a reminder for years, and it's still there today, that a person, you can walk away from the wisdom that is right here. And you can chart your own course. But don't be surprised when your life ends in disarray and shatters. You drive by that house today. It was a nice Cape Cod house. It was a nice brown color, two-car garage. And slowly with time, that house, one end of it began to settle. As you drove by, if you looked at it, it was like, well, that house is leaning. Today, when you drive by it, you don't even need a level to hang on the eaves to see whether or not that house is level. It is leaned downhill very badly. And the doors inside supposedly don't even close right. Somebody didn't heed direction. Well, yeah, they can choose their own path. That's fine. But in thinking about my own, as individuals that make up a marriage, as families, we make up a part of a church or a school, and as a nation, there's a key, I believe, and that is thinking about a friend. You can turn to James chapter 2, and we're going to get there in a bit. You can turn there. Have a pretty long introduction to get there. But I like to think about a friend. What is a friend? A friend is a person whom one knows well and is fond of, an ally or a supporter. And I'll give my title after a while. But in thinking about a friend, it's somebody that we know, one knows well and is fond of. It's a supporter. Proverbs 17, verse 17, probably a verse that came to your mind. Your friend loveth at all times, and your brother is born for adversity. In other words, a friend that is true and unchanging. You know, and God has made us social beings. We interact, maybe some more than others. Some people are socially hyperactive, maybe, and there's others that are almost inverse. Like they just, you know, they prefer to be in a corner somewhere. But there's a balance in that. And there's that desire for friendship, and I believe that God has placed that there within the heart of every person. And there's a reason to. Because God desires that friendship, and we'll get to that in a bit. But thinking about the friendship, somebody to talk with, have a listening ear, But you know, God lets it up to mankind as to whom they will choose to be a friend, of or with. You think back to the Garden of Eden. It's in its perfect state. And it says there that the voice of God came through the garden in the cool of the day. And why that? I believe it was for communication with man, his created ones. And we see that throughout the Old Testament, also very clearly in the New Testament, of God's desire for friendship with man. And this has been the desire ever since creation, friendship. Is there any significance in who a person calls a friend? Proverbs 27, verse 17, iron sharpeneth iron, so a man sharpeneth the countenance of his friends. So in other words, our associates, the people that we are friends with, we spend time with, they will help to shape our life and to help to actually direct our path in life. I say direct, we still make decisions in that, but they influence our path in life. And it can either be in a positive way or it can be in a very negative way. Just talking with a gentleman this past week, he was saying that he had somebody that he went to church with. This was in a different church setting than us, obviously. But his friend professed Christianity, but he was also an officer. And this officer witnessed a fellow officer being taken down in the line of duty. And it was more than he could handle. And what did he turn out? What did he turn to fill that void, that friendship in his life? Alcohol and drugs. And has ruined his life. Sounds like he's trying to get it back together. But, you know, they have some power. Friendships do have a powerful influence on us. 1 Corinthians 15:33, be not deceived. Evil communications or companionship corrupt. And corrupt carries the idea there to shrivel or to wither. Good manners or moral habits. And so, it's clear. Don't be deceived. The people that you're around will rub off on you. Is there value in friendships? Ecclesiastes 4, verse 9 and 10. Two are better than one because they have a good reward for their labor. For if they fall, the one will lift up his fellow. But woe to him that is alone when he falleth, for he hath not another to help him up. You see, friends are a blessing in difficult times, and this subject can be pretty broad. And I'm just going to touch on a couple of these just basic points briefly, because I'd like to get to a core in James chapter 2 and spend some time there. You say, well, are there friendships that are closer than others? And the answer to that is yes, there are. And there may be some of our friends that we only meet a few times a year. This past Friday night, we were blessed to have some friends from the up in like Erie, Pennsylvania, stop by our place for supper. We haven't seen them in quite a while. They're still friends, but it's not somebody that we necessarily interact with on a daily or weekly basis. Yes, there's history that goes back of times that there would have been more interaction, but we're still friends. We see Jesus had a close inner circle, his disciples, that he spent a lot of time with. He shared with them things that he had told them not to share with others because his time had not come yet. He was trying to prepare them for what they would face because of being identified with him. So in thinking about being a friend, an individual that one knows well and has come to have a fondness for, one question may come up is how. So I can choose friends. How do I become a friend of God? Revelation 3, verse 20, I believe is an introduction to that, right? That very point. It says there, behold, I stand at the door and knock. If any man hear my voice and open the door, I will come in to him and will sup with him and he with me. And I'd like to just pause here for a minute to just consider this verse. Jesus is standing at the door and he's knocking. And for some, when they come to the age of accountability, they hear that call, they hear that knock. And sometimes, maybe it's for us as adults, as we have made that decision to serve Christ, and this is years later, maybe we're raising our families, and we have gotten to be too busy, that other things have crowded into our life. And what has happened to God? What has happened to Jesus? Hear that soft knock on that door. Can I come in? See, you and I face the decision then, will we allow Christ in or not? Because we're making decisions every day as to what we are allowing ourselves to have friendships with or not. It's the decision's right here. It's with you and I. If you notice, the only way that we can be called a friend of God is if we open the door and allow Christ to come in. Romans talks about if we confess God with our mouth, that we can be saved and we can believe on Him. Thinking about that choice, I'd like to go back. I'm just going to touch on a couple of verses in the Old Testament. I'll quote them here. You can just listen along. Deuteronomy 30, verse 19 and 20 says, I call heaven and earth to record this day against you, that I have set before you life and death, blessing and cursing. Therefore choose life, that both thou and thy seed may live, that thou mayest love the Lord thy God, and that thou mayest obey His voice, and that thou mayest cleave unto Him, for He is thy life, and the length of thy days, that thou mayest do well in the land which the Lord sware of thy fathers to Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob to give them. Joshua 24, verse 15 says, And if it seem evil unto you to serve the Lord, choose you this day whom you will serve, whether the gods which your fathers served that were on the other side of the flood, or the gods of the Amorites, in whose land you dwell. But as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. Do you notice there's a decision point? Man needs to choose whom they will serve, who they will be a friend of. Mark 10, verse 21, this is the rich young ruler that came to Jesus. And what was Jesus' response to him? He says, then Jesus, beholding him, did what? Loved him. And said unto him, one thing thou lackest, go thy way. Sell whatsoever thou hast, and give to the poor, and thou shalt have treasure in heaven. And come, take up the cross, and follow me. That young man was placed right at the crossroads. What's he going to choose? But you know what? That was too much to ask of him. You know, sometimes that gets pretty close home to us. I actually just read this. You know, in our minds, oftentimes we think about value as in monetary value, dollar signs, okay? For the men, you see dollar signs, like it catches your attention, maybe. But what will it buy you? The richest man in America today is worth $446 billion. He's 53 years old. And if he lived another 40 years, how much would he have to spend per day, 7 days a week, 24 hours a day, to spend $446 billion? He would have to spend approximately $1.3 million every hour, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 52 weeks in a year, for the next 40 years. And man is wowed by that. And they say, wow, that's power. Will it save his soul? No. Will it buy him friendship? No. And too often we get our minds on, our eyes set on the monetary and that what we consider to be value there. And we forget, we fail to recognize that the value is what Christ placed value on. What about the talents he gave? The talents he gave to three different individuals. He gave one, five, and three, and one, or is it 10, five, and one? I forget how it was now. He said, go and use them. The talents were things that God placed value on. And those are the things that God has entrusted into our care, your care, today. And so, in thinking about the things that we are friends of, or friends with, will shape and determine our destiny. James talks about this. He says, James makes it very clear in chapter 4, verse 4, ye adulterers and adulteresses, know ye not that the friendship or the fondness of the world is enmity, or is hostility with God? Whosoever therefore will be a friend of the world is the enemy of God. That's pretty clear language. If I have a fondness for the world, God says that the world is at enmity. There's a war between the two kingdoms, between God's kingdom and Satan's kingdom. And you and I are caught in this, and we need to make decisions as to what kingdom we're going to serve. Whosoever therefore will be a friend of the world is the enemy of God. So if you want to be the friend of God, you need to forsake the world. And we're going to look at it in an individual here in James chapter 2. Of someone who God considered to be his friend. And that's actually the title of the message this morning. And the title of the message is, Does God Call You His Friend? See, there's a difference here. I don't know very many brothers here, but I'm going to pick on Brother Ken here for a minute. And I'm going to say that I don't know Ken very well. A couple years ago, I had served with him on Leola for all-day meetings. And I remember all his subjects were on the home. I remember that. So let's say that I tell Brother Ken that he's my best friend, okay? We're good friends. And, you know, as weeks go by, I don't even talk to him. Week two rolls around, I don't talk to him. But I tell everybody that he's a very good brother. I have a lot of appreciation for him, but I don't really talk to him. Are you a farmer, Ken? He's a farmer, okay. And I tell people, so Ken and I, when we talk about farming. And after a while, this gets around, okay? And people, they meet Ken, they're like, you know what, Ken? You've got a really good friend, Thomas. I don't even know him. They're like, what? Thomas says he's your friend. Yeah. And I tell people how good a farmer he is. Or maybe I tell people, you know what, Ken, he really says he's got a lot of things figured out about farming, but he really doesn't. I mean, he messed this up, he messed that up. Look at all the erosion in that field over there. I mean, if he only considered regenerative agriculture. I don't know where he's at with any of this. I didn't ask him about this before I got up here. Do you get my point? You and I can walk around and we can say, oh, yes, the Lord, he's my friend. Yeah, sure, that's fine. Do you know what confession is? Oftentimes we think about confession as being, I'm confessing something that I made a mistake in, or maybe I sinned. Confession is when what I say and what God says about my life are agreed. So when I say that, yeah, God's my friend, is he agreed with that? Does he say, you know what? That's right. I know Brother Ken down there. Or I know so-and-so brother down. Yes, I know them. Because you know what? There's communication that goes both ways here. Let's look at an Old Testament individual here that God calls his friend. We're actually going to start back in verse 14 because I think there's some groundwork that's very important here. James chapter 2, verse 14 says, what doth it profit, my brethren, though a man say he hath faith and have not works? Can faith save him? Thinking about faith as my belief in Christ. If a brother or sister be naked and destitute of daily food, and one of you say unto them, depart in peace, be ye warmed and filled, notwithstanding, ye give them not those things which are needful to the body, what doth it profit? Even so faith, if it hath not works, is dead, being alone. Yea, a man may say, thou hast faith, and I have works. Show me thy faith without thy works, and I will show thee my faith by my works. Thou believest that there is one God, thou doest well. The devils also believe and tremble. But wilt thou know, O vain man, that faith without works is dead? We're going to pause there for just a minute. The writer here in James, which is probably James himself, is bringing out the point very clearly that I can profess Christianity because that's what faith is based on. It's based on the belief in Christ and the work on Calvary and what Christ has done for the salvation of my soul and for the salvation of mankind. But they will need to accept it, to choose it, to give up of themselves, and to allow the blood to wash their soul. But there's something that follows it. It's discipleship. It's, I can say that I have faith, and my works don't back it up. Swearing continues. And it's like, what? What did Christ say in the Sermon on the Mount? He says, swear not. Does that go together? No. I can say, there's a saying that goes something like this. I can't remember. It just popped in my mind here. Something to the effect that I can't hear a thing you're saying. Your actions are so loud, I can't hear a thing you're saying. And you know, I can profess something, but if my actions don't back it up, there's a problem. And that's what the writer here in James is bringing out. He said, your actions will back up what you say your belief is. He says, you know, if somebody comes to you and they have a need, you say, oh, yeah, be warmed and filled, you know. Yeah. We stopped it before verse 21. Verse 21 says, what was not Abraham our father justified? Justified carries the idea of to render innocent, free, by works. So in other words, when he worked out his faith in Christ, in God, what God asked him to do, says when he had offered Isaac his son upon the altar, because you see, if you recall, when God asked Abraham to take Isaac up and to offer him on that mount, Isaac was what? He was Abraham's promised son, right? And when he went up there and he bound Isaac, he laid all the wood in order, he bound Isaac and laid him there. And God calls out and says, "Abraham, Abraham." What do you think that voice sounded like? He said, "Now I know there's nothing that you have withheld from me." In other words, Abraham was willing to give everything to serve the Lord. Now let's see what the writer James here has to say about this relationship. Verse 22, "Seest thou how faith wrought with his works, and by works was faith made perfect or complete." He's talking about Abraham here back in verse 21. And verse 23, "And the scripture was fulfilled, which saith, Abraham believed God, and it was imputed unto him for righteousness, and he was called the friend of God." And that the friend of God carries the idea of it's something that is actively, something that is like now. A friend, somebody that's fond or dear, so somebody that's involved. Let's finish the chapter and come back and make some comments. "Ye see then how that by works a man is justified, and not by faith only. Likewise also was not Rahab the harlot justified by works, when she had received the messengers and had sent them out another way. For as the body without the spirit is dead, so faith without works is dead also." So backing up to verse 23, "And the scripture was fulfilled which saith, Abraham believed God and it was imputed." What does imputed mean? This is interesting, I think. Imputed carries the idea of to take an inventory. To take an inventory of what? So, sisters, you go to it's time to go shopping, and you're going to go take inventory of your pantry, okay? You step into the pantry, and there's 2 bottles of ketchup, and there's 3 bottles of honey mustard barbecue sauce, and there's 1 bottle of mustard, and okay, we don't need any of that. Okay, that's taking inventory. Those are the things that are on the shelf. Now you step in there, and there's no barbecue sauce. You know what? I'm going to have to put that on my list. Or men, maybe you do inventory in your business. It's the time of the year to figure out what is actually on the shelves and to line it up with what's in the books. Abraham believed God and it was imputed, or because of the inventory of Abraham's life, it was imputed unto him for righteousness, or for right living. Turn back with me to you can keep your finger here in James 2. I'd like to just point out in Genesis chapter 12, I'd like you to ponder just a little bit of Abraham's walk here. And thinking about Abraham's friendship with God, you know, Abraham faced decision points as well. We referenced one with his son Isaac. But you go back to Genesis chapter 12, James says that God considered Abraham a friend. Genesis 12, verse 1 says what? "Now the Lord had said unto Abram, Get thee out of thy country, and from thy kindred, and from thy father's house, unto a land that I will show thee. And I will make of thee a great nation, and I will bless thee, and make thy name great." And then what does he say? "And thou shalt be a blessing." That is what happens when I'm in the center of God's will. But just ponder a minute. So God comes to Abram, and he says, "Abram, it's time for you to leave. I'm asking you to leave your home country here. And I'm going to make of you a great nation. And I'm going to take you to a land I'm going to show you of." Do you think there was any discussions? I don't know if they probably had family gatherings back then, I'm assuming too, right? It was family. Maybe they're gathered around together and there's some cousins and uncles and aunts. Do you think there was any uncles that walked up to Uncle Abram and said, "Abram, what in the world are you doing? Where are you going?" "I don't know, but God told me he's going to show me." Excuse me? You see, today we want to have our road. Like when I came up here, I had a plan. I knew where Pine Creek was. I was never here. I drove by here. But I was never here before. But I had a destination in mind. And so often in life, we do, right? We tend to have a destination in mind. God tells Abram, he says, "I want you to leave. I'm going to make of a great nation of you." But what happened? Let's go down to verse 3. "And I will bless them that bless thee, and curse him that curseth thee, and in thee shall all families of the earth be blessed." So Abram departed, as the Lord had spoken unto him, and Lot went with him, and Abram was 75 years old when he departed out of Haran. Let's drop down to verse 6. And Abram passed through the land unto the place of Sychem, unto the plain of Moriah. And the Canaanite was there in the land. Notice verse 7. And the Lord appeared unto Abram and said, unto thy seed will I give this land. And there builded he an altar unto the Lord who appeared unto him. Here I see a heart of worship. See this back and forth? We have Abram meeting God. God coming down, the Lord appears unto Abram. And Abram's response was, he builds an altar. Did he just do that? Oh, I just need to build an altar. No. I believe his heart was lifted up in praise and adoration for the Lord. And I'm not going to take the time to go through this, but you can go through different passages through Genesis here that, well, actually, go to chapter 13, I believe here's one. Chapter 13, verse 17, arise to the land and the length of it and the breadth of it, for I will give it unto thee. Then Abram removed his tent and came and dwelt in the plain of Mamre, which is in Hebron, and built there an altar unto the Lord. And you have this happening again and again. And you have this friendship. Okay? But Abram was brought to a decision point. What would have happened if Abraham decided that he wasn't going to leave? The story would be totally different. But Abram made that choice. He's a man of faith, and he moved ahead with what God had asked him. And there was a relationship there. But as God looked on Abraham's life, in verse 23 here of James, it says, as he took inventory of what he saw in Abraham's life, it says it was imputed unto him for righteousness, and he was called the friend of God. So I guess the question I'd like to consider for myself and for each of you to consider, as God looks at your life, and as he takes inventory of your life and what he sees on the shelves of your heart, does he say, you know what, that brother is my friend, or that sister is my friend? Adam Clark says this, the friend of God, the highest character ever given to man. As among friends, everything is in common. So God took Abraham into intimate communion with himself and poured out upon him the choicest of his blessings. For as God can never be in want, because he possesses all things, so Abraham, his friend, could never be destitute, because God was his friend. What would you trade for that? Would you trade $1.3 million an hour for that? I hope not, because you cannot place a price tag on that friendship. It's a beautiful thing. And I trust and I hope that you experience that. To be in communion with the Father and to be considered Christ's friend, because you know what? We'll get to them in a little bit, but life has ways of bringing tough things into our lives, doesn't it? And friendships become extremely valuable. And that is when the friendship with God is the sweetest. Because we have no, what did Adam Clark say? For as God can never be in want. Because God will never be in want. He has everything at his disposal because he possesses all things. So Abraham, his friend, could never be destitute because God was his friend. And if you are God's friend and God considers his friend, you will never be left destitute in life. I'd like to think of a couple things. What are the blessings of being a friend of God? First one I think of is when I think of friendship, I think of fellowship. And that could be on several different levels. Matthew 18, verse 20 says, for where two or three are gathered together in my name, there am I in the midst of them. So think of a fellowship, whether it's at a Sunday morning, whether it's at a Wednesday evening, or maybe it's on a Sunday evening and a couple of brothers and sisters get together, some friends get together. There's fellowship. There can be encouragement. The second one is it warms the heart. And you think back to the individuals that were on their way to Emmaus, and there was that discussion, and here this person joins them, and there's this talking going back and forth. And at the end of that, they said in Luke 24, verse 13, and they said one to another, did not our heart burn within us while he talked to us by the way and while he opened to us the scriptures? Does your heart burn within you? In our pace of life, too often we become so busy that we don't even have time to just to walk and be quiet. There's so many things happening. And I guess I would encourage you, and I know different jobs are different. Maybe as a brother here, your job's at a front counter and you're interacting with customers all the time. You know, it's hard just to have quiet time. My job isn't necessarily that way. I enjoy to have quiet time. Sometimes I just need to sort my brain out, try and sort my brain out, and just, you know, maybe some of you young children here think that, you know, friendship is when one person or the other chatters nonstop, okay? That's not necessarily friendship. Did you know as married couples, that you can actually communicate and not say any words? As you mature, you'll get there. Not to say that none of you are immature, but you know what? There's a place in life sometimes that there's a communication of the heart as you just sit in silence. And I think that's a key in the Christian life, is that there needs to be a time and a place for quietness with God. What is it in Matthew 6 or 7 maybe? It talks about entering your closet and shutting the door. And that's a key. It says, and pray to your Father in secret. You know, sometimes it's pretty hard to get the door shut because of all the noise out there. And it's like, it just doesn't want to come shut. But it's a key. Close the door. And as you have communion with the Father, you know, sometimes it's not just about me talking to God, but also listening for what God has to say to me. And then just to be there in his presence. And you say, well, that could be 45 minutes of my day doing nothing. You know what? It could be that. The other thing is it could be while you're driving down the highway. It could be while you're tilling the fields. It could be while you're moving mulch around. And you have an hour, 2 hours, 3 hours of just quiet time. What do I allow to fill my mind? A friend of God will meditate upon the things that God has given me in the Word. And you say, well, what's meditation? Well, if you have ever worried in life, you have meditated. It's just on the wrong thing, okay? Meditation. You think about worrying, well, I wonder how it's going to turn out. Okay, turn that around to a positive. That's meditation. And spend time meditating on the Scriptures. Wonder what God meant there. And it'll warm your heart. The third one is it will leave an impression on others. Acts 4 and verse 13. Now when they saw the boldness of Peter and John and perceived that they were unlearned and ignorant men, they marveled. And they took knowledge of them that they had been with Jesus. You cannot hide your friendship with Christ. What did Jesus say? He said that whoever will be ashamed of me, I will be ashamed of them before my Father. And you cannot hide your friendship with Christ. Because if you do, God does not consider you to be his friend. So what does a friend look like? What does a friend of God look like in 2024? Number one is a friend of God is one who hearkens to the call of God and opens the door. And allows Christ into your heart, and he will. How does it say? He will sup with us. You will take time with God. Bible reading, prayer, fellowship with the saints at church. Those are all important things. What does a friend of God look like in 2024? One who has a single eye focus. You know, in business life, they say that it's, you know, a business needs to have a mission statement. It's their vision of why they're in business. Okay. Did Jesus have a mission statement? Yes, he did. He said he was here to bind up the brokenhearted, to heal those that were blind, to give deliverance. That was his mission in life. And as he concluded his mission here in an earthly sense, in a bodily form, like as he walked the streets here, as he went back, he gave you and I, as Christians here, a job to do. And he says, you need to go out, and you need to tell other people about the good news of salvation. And sometimes that might be just in a conversation. And maybe it's as somebody observes you, because you can't hide, like I mentioned, you can't hide friendship of God. What does a friend of God look like in 2024? A friend is one who will allow correction from his friend. Because you see, God gives correction to those that he loves. And sometimes we chafe at that a little. We're like, oh, really? But it's for our benefit. It's for our good. In John 15, when it talks about the the vine there, there's pruning that's done. There's cutting off of the old branches, but there's also pruning to the ones that are bearing fruit. So that way there can be more fruit that can be born. That actually brings another thought to my mind right now. I'm going to turn there for just quickly. John 15. There's an important verse, I think, here that we should not forget. John 15, verse 16 says this, and thinking about fruit bearing, I think it's tied directly to friendship. A friendship with God, because, well, whatever I am a friend of, whoever I have allowed my heart to have allegiance to, I will bear the fruit of that. And thinking about bearing fruit for Christ, is it seasonal? Is there times where fruit bearing is really good and then there's just no fruit? John 15, verse 16 says this, "Ye have not chosen me, but I have chosen you and ordained you," or appointed you, "that ye should go and bring forth fruit, and that your fruit should remain." And remain there carries the idea of to stay. In other words, it's there all the time. So in other words, fruit bearing is not seasonal. Now, the quantity may change. The sweetness of the grapes may change. There was a person that was taking a tour of the Napa Valley region in California, and they seen the thousands of acres of these of vines that were out there on the trellises. And they said something to the tour guide. They said, "This must take a lot of water to keep all these plants alive." And the tour guide said, "Well," he said, "something that we've noticed," he said, "it is that if we allow the vines to struggle for a bit for moisture, it produces the sweetest grapes." You know, sometimes in life you may feel like you're in a desert and it feels so dry. It doesn't mean that the fruit production shuts off. It means that the fruit that comes to your life will be really sweet. We probably all have been around people like that who have went through very difficult things in life. And just something about them, there is a sweetness that you leave, that when you leave, you're touched. And so, allow the correction from God, His guiding hand, allow His correction in your life. It is for your good. What does a friend of God look like in 2024? One whose faith is backed up by His actions. So in conclusion, thinking about the question, does God call you His friend? Does He enjoy daily communion with you outside of just your personal devotions? What kind of inventory does God see in your life? The things that you have invested in, the things that are sitting on the shelf, in the shelf of your heart, are they things that God values as well? Because God is desiring a friendship with everyone, with all of you, with all of mankind. But we know that not all man will choose to be a friend of God. If a man is unwilling to open his heart's door and allow God into his life initially, and thinking of the new birth, there will be a time of cutting off. But if one has opened their door, swung it wide, and allowed Christ into their heart, you can enjoy a communion and a fellowship that is unlike anything else that will ever be experienced, and you can never put a price tag on. And as you face life, it will give you purpose and meaning in life that nothing else will ever will. Because, what did Adam Clarke say? "For as God can never be in one, because He possesses all things," he says, "so Abraham, so you, His friend, can never be destitute, because God is your friend." Let's come before the Lord in prayer.